Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. Bonjour.
Yeah, I was wondering who was going to do the French, because it certainly wasn't going to be me.
Nous sommes les mêmes rouges idales. Hey, we are the Idle Red Hands.
Yeah, not bad.
In French. En français. And I will be speaking the entire episode in bilingual.
Très bon.
Or at least with a French chance.
Hey, I can put on a bad French accent, but you know, after that Morgan Freeman attempt, I prefer not to.
Yeah, he's not French. Maybe that was the problem with your impression.
All right, I'm going to do a French Morgan Freeman. There
Je
you go.
Suis Morgan Freeman. Nope,
that's was better than
even though you butchered the French accent, he still sounded blacker than your first attempt.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try because, yeah, I can't speak French. I took 2 years of it in high school, but pas remembre, nothing.
Yeah, well, not even less so.
Well, if you haven't already, can you please check out the survey that's on our website? It's not a podcast survey. It is about tabletop role-playing games, so I think it's something of benefit to us all. And that's just for my classes. So I'm doing a survey and looking at what people want and trying to decide if the tabletop role-playing game industry can give it to them.
Well, seeing as how this is a tabletop RPG podcast, I hope the people who listen would be interested in taking a tabletop RPG survey.
And I can tell you, Chris and Wayne were interested in taking it, what, 7 times?
Yeah. It was just that interesting, really.
My answers changed every single time.
To be honest, I was so happy that somebody was finally interested in my opinion that I would have done it 10 times.
Well, even though I switched over to reading 13th Age, there was a Kickstarter I saw that I was kind of interested in called Tianxia, kind of like a kung fu setting for Fate Core. Mm-hmm. And it's put out by Vigilance Press. And the book looked really nice. It was going to be like an 8.5x11 hardback book, full color. You know, you get to see kind of sample pages on the Kickstarter website. And I considered backing it. But then I looked, and the lowest tier for a physical copy of the book was $45, which, okay, that's not terrible, because you also get the PDF and everything. Mm. But shipping outside of the States was
$45. Oh, yeah, that's pretty
and
bad.
I'm like I understand that international shipping is expensive, which is unfortunate, because that has prevented me from backing a couple Kickstarter projects just because the shipping was going to be so much. I'm like, I'm not going to pay as much for the product as I am for the shipping. So I know there's not much the Kickstarter organizers can do about that, but I don't know, it's just kind of a shame.
Well, you know, Wayne, actually, this goes for you, but also for anyone else living in Japan here. The company I work for, Foreign Buyers Club, we have a service that we ship items from the U.S. To Japan for, it's pretty cheap for books. It starts from $20. It gets more expensive as items get heavier, but I don't think books would go over that limit. It's we have a warehouse in L.A. where you can ship the books there, so it's just a domestic price, and then, yeah, they could ship them over for hopefully relatively cheaply. Check it out online, fpcusa.com.
You just chopped my rant knees out from under me, didn't you?
Oh, please, my apologies. Rant away, good sir.
I got nothing now.
But you got your rant fan, so that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, knowing
give some good
that,
reasons.
Yeah, knowing that, I might actually back it then, because, as I said, it looked interesting and like a pretty polished product. So. Mm-hmm. By the time this goes up, it'll probably be done, because it only had 5 days left as of this recording.
Speaking of Kickstarter, there's that game Shadows of Brimstone.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah, nor
have I. It's like a Western board game.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Western versus Cthulhu and other things like that. And man, it looks really good, but wow, it's kind of expensive.
How much is like the basic level?
You can get the game for about $75.
Ooh.
Is that with or without the international shipping?
International, $15, so not too bad.
Oh, nice, nice.
Oh, your rant just having no value.
Yeah, really, really. Thanks a lot, guys.
So for this episode, we're going to do another installment of our Warrior series. This time we're going to do Musketeers.
In case you couldn't tell by the French at the beginning.
I'm sure the French have had more than one type of warrior. Maybe you can put in cricket sounds there.
I probably will.
Now, those who haven't listened to a Warriors episode before, the idea is we take a warrior type from history, and we pull out themes that we think are fairly special or pretty interesting about that warrior type, and then we discuss them as things that you can add to your game. Not necessarily to your warrior character, but to any character and to any type of game.
Oui. Perhaps even may we.
Oh, and I just thought of another warrior type, French Foreign Legion. Something to do in the future.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah, because there's a song that they sing in the movie March or Die. I guess it's some classic song, but I think it starts with we. Da 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 da. Yeah.
I choose to march.
Kind of like a riff on the Fall and Die.
Yeah, actually.
Which is the King's Musketeers motto, isn't it, Wayne?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes. As opposed to all for one or all for one for all, which doesn't appear to be anyone's motto, actually.
I think it was some special friend's motto.
This is true.
in a book by Dumas. Hmm. But before we get into the Musketeers, and this came up when we were talking about the episode prior to recording, and Chris suggested that since we always refer to these certain warrior types or fighter types in our episodes, we acknowledge where we got it from and just review what they are. We got it from the book History of Warfare by John Keegan. Mm-hmm. And then I think it came up in was first introduced in our war episode.
Yes.
Right.
But Keegan, a historian, said that there are four types of warrior. First being, of course, warrior. And examples of these would be where the warrior is an actual social class in society. For example, like the knights and samurai that we talk about in that episode, those would be a good example or the classic example of that type of fighter.
Yeah, we've done a few podcasts on that kind of, for example, the knights and samurai, the Apache, the Mongolian horsemen.
Right.
Things like that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the third one because I knew Apache and knights were warrior.
Vikings kind of fits into there, but that's more a overall cultural warrior culture thing than warriors specifically. But
right,
yes. Anyway.
Except we called it our warriors.
Yes,
we did. It's a warriors episode.
Yes, it's all about them Viking warriors. Yes. Another type was a soldier, which is a professional warrior, kind of a trained, regimented. Well, exactly the word soldier. It fits with kind of the modern day conception of a soldier. Examples of these would be like the stormtroopers. The World War I stormtroopers, not the Imperial stormtroopers from Star Wars.
Right.
Flying aces, Roman legionnaires, things of that meant.
Oh yeah, they were a split.
Mm, that's right. Yeah,
they transferred from one into soldiers.
Mm. Yes.
So the thing that they started off as would be okay. So me, pitch it to myself.
Go for it.
they started off as militia, which would be which is the third type. And we did an episode on them. We also did an episode on hoplites.
Right.
That was actually our first official Warriors episode. Yes. Knights and Samurai was still in.
Kind of like a prototype.
Yeah, a prototype.
All right, and the last warrior type is mercenary, where I guess they're kind of like soldiers, but, you know, unlike soldiers, they don't work for any one, what's the word I'm looking for, country or organization. They obviously shop themselves around to whoever the highest bidder is. And the condottieri are the classic mercenaries.
Yep.
Yes.
And they also had an episode.
Right.
A few months back.
In case you couldn't tell.
Yes. So, where do the musketeers fit?
Technically soldier, but soldier.
They kind of stray into warrior a little bit, though, don't they?
I thought so. Or I guess maybe even a little bit into mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Because they take money for their services?
Well, yeah. Again, I guess a little
no.
bit foreshadowing. No.
No.
Well intoned. No. You're just wrong. No.
All right. Thank you.
Well, no, but I mean, a soldier gets money for their services.
Right.
Yeah. But, and actually, the musketeers, they had to pay for their own horse and armor and everything like that. I think the only thing they got from the kingdom was their tunic and the rifle, or not rifle, the musket.
Right. No, I said...
Interesting musket fact.
Okay.
Because they were still calling them muskets when they turned into rifles.
Well, thank you for that, Lyle.
Yeah, now, when did we start doing cowboys?
I don't know.
I thought last episode we were talking about the cowboy narrator.
Yes, yes.
Oh, is that where that came from? Cool.
Yeah, but didn't we also discuss how you should fit the narrator to the setting? In this case, like a bad French accent?
Sometimes they called their muskets rifles when they were still muskets. Sometimes they... the other way around. Pardon moi.
But that's not actually one of the interesting things that we picked out for them. Although Wayne did find that found them a bit fascinating because they could be a hybrid. No, of some of them.
I like how you slipped a no in there.
Yeah. No, the reason why I say no is just because it's around about the time that they're starting to have standing armies.
Right.
So that's. That's the definition of the soldiers, those that serve in a standing army. And they have the idea of like these regiments. And even in the regiments, though, I mean, if you look at another musketeer, an English musketeer, if you will, the Redcoats, the officer class was still consisted of nobles and nobility. So, social class still had a role within the professional soldier's life. But they're not... a social class in and of themselves.
Right.
And so you already have to be a noble to become a musketeer.
Right. And I guess this is maybe jumping ahead, but I certainly wasn't saying that the musketeer was kind of a rank in society, which is what the definition of a warrior would be. You know, outside of the battlefield, outside of their job, warriors are awarded this kind of status. But... just due to the kind of popularity of the French musketeers as a unit is kind of why I saw them bleeding over into warrior a little bit.
I'd agree, though. Actually, I think they do kind of bridge the gap a little bit between the warriors and the soldiers, because they were one of the first, I suppose the word is warriors, in France that weren't required to come from nobility. Even commoners could join the musketeers. Though, I mean, you couldn't just walk up, you know, off of your farm and say, I want to be a musketeer, despite what Dumas's book says. You still needed a letter of recommendation from some kind of titled person, and you had to have enough money to provide all your own sword and horse and everything like that. But you didn't have to have title to be a musketeer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you didn't have to have title to be a warrior. I mean, Japan has a very famous example of one of the unifiers. Toyotomi Hideyoshi started from pretty low status and then was elevated through his own actions. I mean, there's still, even in a aristocracy, there's still room for a little bit of meritocracy.
Absolutely. But I think this
despite
is where,
what people think.
This is where I think it started to change for France specifically from a class of warriors, at least warriors who came strictly out of the nobility, into kind of a professional role as a warrior that could be enjoined by anybody.
Well, in an attempt to pacify this discussion, even though I started it, I think, as you said, you didn't have to be nobility to join the musketeers, at least later on, you know, during the organization. But the fact that so many of them were at least minor nobles definitely muddies the water of why they had that status. It's kind of like they were already kind of had that higher status for being minor nobility, which conflicts the idea a little bit, you know.
Sure. Let's all agree and be in the spirit of compromise. There's certainly overlap.
Come on, all but for yeah, one I mean, and different. One for all.
Yay! But I mean, you look at different branches of the military having a higher standard than others. The cavalry having a fairly high status until about 100 years after they were no longer useful.
So they had a good run, apparently. Man, talk about killing a joke.
Jeez. It was more of a good gallop, I think.
Oh. Yeah, I thought, is he trying to make a pun? And then why didn't he use a horse kind of pun? But I guess, you know.
Well, horses do run, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. They had a solid canter. How about that?
There you go.
Moving on.
Yeah. Actually, we had a really good seg into our first theme about 5 minutes ago. and that was when Wayne first talked about he did see elements that were interesting about the minor nobility. So our first theme, Wayne, is...
I'm going to butcher this French, entrain.
Entrain!
Right, which means zeal or high spirit.
Esprit de corps.
Yes.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to say esprit de corps, and I'm like, we use it in English well.
So I should have intoned it more of esprit de corps.
And what does that mean, the high spirits?
Whenever anyone thinks of a musketeer, and the French musketeers in particular, they're depicted in media as being these energetic fighters, you know, doing all kinds of tricks, swashbuckling, swinging off the chandeliers, you know, this high energy kind of fighting style, or just being completely over the top. And that actually is what they were known for, perhaps not swinging from the chandelier, but because, as Chris said, this organization, this military organization, was open to minor nobility, and even, I think, further down the line, commoners, the way to advance in the musketeers, the only way to advance both in your military career and your social standings, was to be noticed. And the way to do that is to be flashy and over the top and make sure you catch people's attention with your skill at arms. It's not like you can stay in the musketeers and just be promoted for, you know, having a long service or just kind of doing your job. You had to stand out. And what better way to do that than to swing from a chandelier while still doing your job?
What if your job...
Is chandelier swinging? I don't know.
No, was killing. I think you would advance a little bit. But yeah, no, that's a really good point. You need to be noticed. I mean, it is kind of a meritocracy, but you're not going to have year-end reviews. It's, yeah, be noticed and you can go far.
Right. And the other thing was a lot of the musketeers were sons, like second or third sons, and elder brothers would go on to, and again, I'm going to butcher these, the other military organizations which had been established before the musketeers. And for those, you had to be, you know, kind of high-ranking noble or first-born son. And so these second and third-born children, I can also see them wanting to step out of, you know, kind of that shadow cast by their elder brother. And again, you're not that you're going to act out, but hey, the middle kid kind of has to, you know, do something outrageous to be noticed. So I'm sure that was a motivation for some of them. And just that kind of attitude of, we have to stand out and let's just, you know, be not as crazy, but as flashy and eye-catching as possible.
You know, speaking of flashy, I don't know if it's necessarily only related to the musketeers, but certainly around this time in the 30-year war, and you'd have the mercenaries and other people that would wear very flashy clothing, and then they would rip them so they would appear underneath, and that's because they would steal all their clothing and wear it underneath. So they would cut the outer garment so you could still see the nicer ones underneath. So that's why you have if you ever wondered why they had that kind of split, that poofy split design. So they put in those splits. Kind of like the 80s when you bought your jeans and they were pre-ripped. Was that the 80s or the early 90s?
I think it was more 90s age.
Yeah. I guess the 80s when they have acid wash.
Yeah,
that's all you need.
Some acid wash musketeers.
They're kind of like the musketeers of the 80s, I think. Yeah, I mean, you got to be noticed.
Yeah, big sunglasses.
Think about that. Yeah. You know, that, I mean, we're making fun of it, but actually that's the way to go. I mean, we talk about how these themes are to be used in any era with any game, and that's, you really got to embrace that. a very good a supplement that we reviewed in an earlier episode for Vampire was the 80s.
Oh, yeah, New Wave Requiem.
Yep. And just, yeah, embrace it, whatever it is. I mean, if it's the 70s, then you're going to wear those wide collars.
Right.
80s, you're going to wear pastel. I don't think you'd wear acid wash even if you're a musketeer in the 80s.
90s, you're going to wear all that grunge flannel.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Grunge vampires.
I don't know. Is that flashy? Isn't that anti-flash?
Actually, I take it back. You're right. You would blend in. So
you would want...
business suit?
I guess when everybody's zigging, you're going to zag.
Yeah.
So what... You know what you would have been in the 90s? Hip-hop.
Okay.
When they started to embrace sports styles and gangster style.
Oh, right. That early, early rap thing with like the giant alarm clock around your neck.
Right, I'm imagining, yeah, the tracksuit.
That was like one guy.
Oh, but man,
yeah, remember, and
that one guy did a lot.
Yeah,
and calling yourself Flavor Flav.
Immortalized for that.
But I think in the early 90s, they did wear flashier colors, but they weren't tied to the streets or sports teams as much.
Right.
But they would wear the shoulder pads, the leather trench coats, started to wear Timberlands.
Mm.
Winter jackets, and you're like, gosh, I'm from Canada, and the way these guys dress, and they're like south of me. Wow.
It's back when Timberlands were still just like work boots. As you said, Lyle, Warriors, the series we do, is not only for martial characters, they're anybody. So again, taking this to like fantasy, we've discussed this before, but a wizard, if you're playing a musketeer type character, you don't want to be sneaky and, you know, go unnoticed. You want those big, flashy spells. And hey, here's a use for what's that cantrip nobody uses that changes things colors? I'm drawing a blank. Prestidigitation. There you go. Every wizard gets that, at least in D&D 3.5, and nobody ever really uses it. But if you're a musketeer, I could see that. You know, just that the fighting style just turns somebody blue while you're fighting because, hey, that's flashy.
Exactly. And then laugh at them while you swing from your chandelier.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's really a good point. These guys, they were possibly commoners, or they were among the lowest ranks of the nobility. So they were all young and out there to make a name for themselves. They were daring, and that's exactly the case. They wanted to do as much as they could in front of as many people as they could to show the king or whoever is powerful nearby them that they are a person to spend fortunes on, to give fortune to.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, going to get a little bit into combat. But again, a lot of games, you have the dexterous fighter, and then you just have like the brute strength fighter. And only a very narrow slice of characters do those like dirty tricks or tumble in combat or do those kind of dexterous maneuvers, you know, obviously the characters that are built for it. But here is a chance for everybody to do that kind of thing because it's kind of expected of you. And yeah, if you just stand there in the back and swing your sword, great, everybody imagine a game where XP was tied to how flashy you were. And if you just kind of stood there, swinging your sword again and again and again, everybody else is going to, you know, level up faster than you because you are not being flashy enough.
I know we've talked about gladiators in a previous episode. And our buzzword or buzz phrase for this episode is a previous episode. But, you know, like in the movie Gladiator, when he just efficiently kills all those guys in the ring, and they're saying, no, you got to like prolong it.
Right. Class.
Got to make it a show. Yeah. So you might actually prolong a combat because no one's around to see it or see the killing blow.
Yeah, or here's a chance to use all those combat maneuvers because, hey, bull rush that guy out the shop window into the street so everybody can see you beat him.
Yeah, and how flashy is it to throw a guy through a window, hey?
It's like a classic, yeah.
Exactly.
Swing, maybe even more classic for us with Kears, swing from the chandelier and boot him out the window.
Yes.
And I mean, there's system things that can help you, like Wayne mentioned about bull rushing, for example, Pathfinders of the Feet, Dazzling Display. Mm. If you're looking at a system like World of Darkness, people can mix and match the attributes and the skills to have things that would represent what you're doing. It's kind of a performance.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and go with that.
One of the systems and I guess setting books that I looked at heavily for this was All for One, Regime Diabolique for Ubiquity, and they have a Savage Worlds version of it now as well. But this is a game set in 1636, and all the characters have to be musketeers, and a good section of the book and character creation are the different types of fighting styles and all the things you can do with that. And I'm not going to say it's historically accurate, but it's kind of one of those historical fantasy games. And a couple of the schools are dirty tricks or being incredibly flashy or doing interesting things with a cloak. How often do you see in movies, you know, you flip a cloak around somebody's head and deal with them that way, or do kind of tricks with making things disappear? I think that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a lot of fun. You've mentioned that system before, but I didn't know that fighting school was a part of it. I really want to check it out now, more so than before.
They have like a whole bunch of them. I forget, maybe at least like 10 or maybe even like 12 different schools that all focus on different things.
Cool.
And it's very kung fu-esque, where, you know, certain styles are better or worse at doing certain maneuvers against other schools. So there's a reason there for kind of switching up your style. And
nifty.
I think they'd be pretty fun. You're like, oh, now we're fighting this guy who, you know, we're not going to be that good against. So let's switch up our style and be able to beat him that way.
That's awesome.
You're talking about all the different styles and how we're linking your status with how you actually kill somebody or dispatch somebody if you're playing that kind of game. But you can even have a biker gang.
Mm.
And your status in the biker gang is not necessarily winning the fight, but how you won the fight.
Right.
If you're linking status with the how, then it can encourage your players to do some pretty elaborate things, like, you know, taking that chain, tying it to your motorcycle, tying the other end to them, dragging them around.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, things just got kind of dark. I don't know why dragging someone on the back of a motorcycle via a chain is darker than stabbing them with a rapier, but kind of is.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Longer amount of pain, I think, might have something to do with it.
Yeah. But for example...
But, you know, that's another thing, is that these kinds of flashy, building a name for yourself, it doesn't necessarily have to be through combat, though that probably was the most common use of it. But, I mean, there was, this is kind of stealing more from the Three Musketeers book than from actual history. But, for example, with D'Artagnan, he had these legends of just how many women of the court he'd bed, and that was part of where his name came from.
Different kind of sword fighting.
Yes.
Were they not women? Oh.
Maybe.
Wasn't sure where you're going, but yeah, anyway. But yeah, I mean, that's what it's something to say also. Being able to speak well or dance well or recite poetry at the court well, all of these different things can be drawing attention to yourself, which can be a way for you to make a name.
Yeah, and again, that kind of links back to the minor nobility or, you know, kind of second or third sons of minor noble houses, where that kind of thing is still going to be expected of you. And yeah, you could distinguish yourself on the battlefield or through your sword play, but you're still expected to know how to dance and conduct yourself in court. You know, you can't be like a complete ruffian.
You know, that could be a pretty fun spin if you wanted to make a character who actually came out of the common class to this, that you, a lot of those kind of courtly procedures and activities would be almost completely foreign to you, but if you had somehow got into the ranks of the musketeers, they would be expected of you.
Right.
Could be a fun learning curve.
Fish out of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read that rap battles go all the way back to Scotland.
Here, I thought you were going to say 1636 France.
When one of you mentioned about poetry, you can bring the rap battle to that musketeer campaign.
I think you need to write into those epic rap battles of history, guys, and suggest a musketeer.
Ancient musketeer versus ancient Scotsman?
Yeah, sure.
You better step down, Holmes.
Well, I guess this gets a little bit into setting, but what you said about, you know, beating someone with words, or not necessarily your sword, but I read that during the time of the musketeers in France, dueling to the death was a crime punishable by death.
Hmm.
So even though that's kind of, you know, you see it in the movie or read it in the books a lot, hey, you kind of don't want to duel, because if you get caught, then just because you're a musketeer doesn't mean you're exempt from the law. You know, you're going to get hung too, so try and beat that guy without killing him. You know, maybe just humiliate him real bad. Of course, I don't think you would get XP for just humiliating monsters.
I don't know.
Hey, why you got to make it about XP, Wayne?
Because that is a very tangible reward for players.
You orcish ruffians!
Here's the thing about XP as the reward, which I'm not saying don't do it, but if you're linking, for example, status with combat or social success, well, that's not much of a stretch. Then that's the idea, is you're giving them something. If your game has a mechanic that actually is status or very, very similar to status, then you would actually give that to the players in lieu of experience points.
Right. And I totally support that XP was just a shorthand for advancement. I totally support fictional advances over mechanical ones.
Okay. No, yeah. I was just saying.
Yep. Yep. Hey, it's easier to say XP than fictional advance.
FA from now on.
Okay.
Sounds good.
What would be the next theme, Wayne?
Our next theme would be rivalité. And I'm sure I butchered that. Rivalry. Because shortly after the King's Musketeers were founded in 1622, Cardinal Richelieu founded the Cardinal's Guards. And they worked as his personal bodyguard. And they were essentially the same thing. They just reported to a different person. And the analogy I came up with was a high school that has two football teams.
Ooh, that's nice.
They're both working for the same school, but they're separate teams, and there's going to be both good-natured and maybe not-so-good-natured rivalry between the two teams.
No, yeah, I thought that that really stood out as a good theme to incorporate into your game. It could be rival schools of magic. Mm. It could be rival schools of musketeers. Ah, I tapped out. Obviously, I have a blank.
Well,
did I say biker gangs again?
No, you didn't say rival biker gangs.
Ooh, rival gangs of bikers.
Rival gangs of musketeers. Yeah. But no, I think that is, if you go with, you know, kind of the taking the idea from the French history, it's, again, an interesting idea because lots of times people say rivals don't have to be out and out bad guys or enemies. You know, it can be, you know, two lawful good paladins who are just kind of at odds with each other over what is supposed to happen. But that can be difficult to do sometimes, where here is a clear example of, no, these military organizations are both working for the same country.
Mm-hmm.
They're essentially brothers, but because they report to different people, and just because they're different groups, there's going to be rivalry between them, good-natured about, you know, who's maybe better at sword fighting, or maybe even down to, as you know, kind of the classic Three Musketeers book or story, actual fighting. And throwing an extra layer on top of that, when Cardinal Richelieu died, they passed to another cardinal, his successor, Cardinal Marizan. But when that cardinal died in 1661, the cardinal's guards went back to control of the king. So now the King's Musketeers became the first company, and the Cardinal's Guards became the second company. And so now it's two organizations who do the same thing that work for the same guy. And there's still going to be rivalry just because you've been working separately for so long, and the groups are still there, but now you're kind of working for the same boss, essentially.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So good, I stopped the conversation.
No, I just thinking. Just, well, again, you know, I like to soak in your words sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just ignore them. Yeah, there's the same thing. All right.
So it's like a wine, you know, I'm just rolling it in the glass.
But leaving it in the barrel, yeah.
Swishing it, spitting it back out.
Yes, getting it back out. Oh, geez. No, but again, to use the high school sports team, it's like, yeah, okay, we've seen shows on TV where two teams get merged into one, which is essentially what happened with the Musketeers. And that doesn't mean everybody starts working together immediately. You know, there are those still rivalries and kind of groups and cliques. So,
well, the good thing about it is, yeah, you do have those external control, like within the game, but you do have the coach or the king, the cardinal, who don't want to have them openly fighting.
Right.
So you have to be clever. I mean, if you want to encourage more social combat, I mean, this is a great way to do it because they would have to win that rap battle. They would have to dance better, you know. So yeah, every social interaction becomes a competition. So suddenly there's a dance off. You know that part of the character sheet that says perform that maybe you've put in like the odd skill point in?
Right.
Now you have incentive to put lots of skill points in.
I'm imagining, now you keep saying like a dance battle, and just because we were talking about hip hop before, and imagining like musketeers pulling out their cardboard boxes and laying it on the sidewalk.
I saw a video yesterday of
musketeers dancing. Awesome.
No. Marines dancing to Michael Jackson's Billie Jean.
Right.
Oh.
And they had some really good dancers.
Well, I imagine the training they do, they're, you know, kind of have to be
with their training.
All right, that came out wrong. They're training in classical ballet. No, I meant, you know, they're trained to act as a team and a unit, so.
It wasn't like a synchronized.
Oh, it was just one guy?
One guy was doing a little pop and lock, and then a couple other guys came. Kind of, it was a very good-natured dance-off.
Okay.
There are lots of those videos on YouTube. Check out Show Me the Way to Amarillo by, I think it's a British Army regiment. Really good.
Oh, like they have a dance-off?
No, it's just, it seems that a common hobby among bored people on base stationed in Iraq or wherever around the world is to remake music videos on base.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I saw one where they did maybe Britney Spears.
Yeah, I think I saw that one. It was pretty
Americans.
Pretty dodgy.
Yeah, why would you choose that?
Because you don't have any other CD?
Because you've done 34 others already.
Okay, we've done all the cool stuff, and that's the one that gets picked up. Yeah. And everybody's like, why did they choose Britney Spears? And it's like, well, we'll check out our other ones.
Trying to think how to bring it back to Musketeer.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we're so far
that's a way to get noticed. That if you have an internet and you're a Musketeer, I guess you'd be posting a lot of online videos of stuff.
Britney Spears.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be of you fighting or something like that and not lip-syncing to the latest Britney Spears. Or...
No. To tie into the flashy thing, you have to lip-sync to a Britney Spears while fighting someone. No? Nothing? All right.
To a Britney Spears?
All right. Yeah, that came out wrong.
Yeah, we're probably dating ourselves a little bit.
But we already talked about 80s fashion.
Hey, she's still a pop icon.
Wayne, what? Yeah, she's a Vegas icon now. But Wayne was telling me how the latest Glee episode he watched was you had to be a Katy Perry or a Lady Gaga. So
right.
Apparently those are the two polar extremes of the pop world.
And if there had to be, we'd pick one for Musketeers, what, there would be Lady Gagas?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to know.
Yeah, they would be Lady Gagas. Sure. Didn't think I'd have to answer this question.
I never imagined in my life that question would come up. So are the Musketeers more Lady Gagas or Katy Perry's?
And just to clarify, that's not a regular feature of our Warriors episodes.
No. So wait, it was Warriors, Soldiers, Mercenaries, and Gagas, was it?
Yeah, it's like a little matrix. We got on the one end is where they are on the actual Warrior scale, and then we have where they are on the...
Katy Perry,
the
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to put him in a position. I see an opening. It's like a marketing position map. And since we are talking about some colorful personalities, that leads into our next theme.
Yeah, so the next theme is colors. And as we mentioned, both the King's Musketeers and the Cardinal's Musketeers kind of got merged into a single unit, the first company and the second company. And the first company became known as the Grey Musketeers, Musketeer Gris, because of the grey horses they rode. And the second company of Musketeers became known as the Black Musketeers, the Musketeer
Noir,
right? For, yeah, black horses. Not very original, but still kind of cool.
No, I think that's very cool. I mean, not kind of cool. That's very cool. I think color is not... You know, really used enough. I mean, other than you might introduce your character as these colors, but colors are an important thing. I mean, they become a very recognizable part of who you are, especially in those times. The red coats.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
We might think of them as a little bit more modern by the Musketeers, but they're actually their contemporaries.
Right.
And around about that time is when they started to actually adopt the famous red coat. And the reason why they chose red?
Easy to see.
Hides the blood.
Wrong in both, and easy to see. Well, I guess it's easy for your commanders to see, but actually, because I thought you meant like the enemies to see.
No.
Yeah, right there. Shoot. Actually, it's just cheap.
Oh, really?
The red dye is very cheap, and blood will show up black on a red coat. Hmm. Chris lived a very sheltered life.
You saying that red is very cheap makes me then wonder at the time if it was expensive to make blue, because I know the French musketeers wore kind of like that blue tunic or like a blue tabard kind of thing. And them being royal musketeers, you would assume that they were given fancier clothes.
I know purple was one of the most expensive dyes to make, so it was reserved for almost exclusive royalty. But yeah, I don't know about blue.
I think indigo was expensive.
Just
think maybe expensive up until the time of artificial chemicals.
Right.
It might be worth noting that despite them being named gray and black musketeers for the color of their horses, they didn't actually wear gray or black. They, as Wayne mentioned, they all wore blue. Well, actually, no, they wore blue to begin with, but later on it became primarily red, hey? With, what was it, a silver embroidery around it?
I even read it was like gold. Gold lace around the edge. You know, they became kind of super fancy. But as you said, color isn't used enough in games, Lyle. And think of a color that is, I would say, expensive to produce if you're kind of playing up the royalty aspect as the king's musketeers were. Or if you're just, because we're talking about musketeers, you want to be flashy. So you want to choose a, I would say, a bright color, an expensive color, so that nobody can mistake who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't be a flashy fighter or a flashy personality in slimming black.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You got to make a choice.
And if you, you know, go with a non-flashy color, well, your choice is then to not play a musketeer.
Perhaps.
Colors can be used for marking. I mean, how you incorporate it into your surroundings can be quite clever. How the game master can incorporate the colors into clues and into parts of the game can be quite good.
Well, playing up on the fact that you want to be seen, I read that musketeers, while they were off duty, were invited to parties, kind of to be shown off, maybe not be shown off, but to display a presence there. And that both reminded people who was in charge, you know, the king, but because they were such a popular and flashy group, they added, maybe not gravitas, but they added some excitement to whatever function they were attending. And I don't mean they were ordered to go do this. They, from what I read, did this while they were off duty.
Yeah, I read something about the musketeers moonlighting for nobility, though what I read seemed to imply, or at least suggest, that it was more in a, kind of in a warrior kind of fashion, like a security detail or as a mercenary thing, though it didn't come out right and say it. So, yeah, I'm not sure to what capacity, but yeah, they definitely did that. They went around and partied a lot. But again, that was also a part of their trying to be eye-catching. Because the more people in high places that can see you, the better it is for making your name. Though I suppose in a game, you would have to be a little bit careful about that. You know, if you went to a party of somebody who was out of favor with the king, even if you were unaware of it, that could work against you too.
What I liked about it, I mean, certainly I do like the continued theme of being flashy and being noticed and that reciprocal status thing that can go on. But I like that just like the moonlighting is somebody working two jobs. And we see that in some games in some respect where you are fighter, thief, wizard, or cleric, slash caravan guard, right? Which can be, you know, people might roll their eyes. They see that as just a way to get them into the real proper story. But I think a lot of things can be done, especially in maybe non-D&D games where occupations might play a larger role. And that kind of moonlighting that you can do. Bouncer in a certain club. And then a story can lead from there, you know?
I like that because sometimes run across the problem of, okay, you know, this player can't show up. But if you're running a game where the player characters are musketeers or an organization kind of like the musketeers, well, then whoever doesn't show up, I mean, unless you're in the middle of a dungeon or in the middle of a place that doesn't make sense for them to disappear, well, then they have duty. You know, they are off doing their actual job, and so they're not hanging out with the group this time around. And that's one way to do it. Of course, you would kind of have to do like an episodic campaign where everybody both begins and ends the adventure, you know, in a central location, so it makes sense for the person to disappear. But then you could also do the reverse where, okay, and the reason you're all together is because the king or whoever has sent you all out on this mission, and it's your job to go and do that. So I think you can do it both ways, which I think, again, is pretty interesting.
Yeah, you could have different musketeers who run in completely different kinds of social circles and yet have to be forced together because they still have that loyalty to the king soldier aspect about them.
You know, what I was thinking is just when Wayne was saying somebody was going away or couldn't make it for a session, I'll admit you can't always do this. I'm not saying to force this into the game. But let's say their other job is police officer or bouncer or something, they become the NPC in that other job for that session, which you may or may not meet as the players. And that might be a way around. How does that person get back to where we are?
Right.
Is their other job is bringing them there? So that your modern campaign, you know, you're in the streets, you've caused a ruckus. Oh, look, first car on the scene is that guy and the session. Or it could be you go to a club, that they're the bouncer at the club. That's their second job. So they're, you know, they got to do their job. So you are just going to control them as an NPC. Mm-hmm. Something happens and the session, the NPC is with them.
And that explains why they're back next session. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, huge caveat is that not always possible, only when it would be, seem natural.
Right.
But having that idea is that it could happen that when you're off moonlighting, or if you're away for a session, you will be moonlighting in your other job that you have to decide. And the possibility is that the game master will play you in that job, in that capacity.
I also like the moonlighting aspect because...
Romantic tension?
No, I was thinking, and we've discussed this numerous times, why is the party together? And, hey, it's because you're all musketeers. You all work for the same organization. But you still get time off. If you kind of do the classic D&D thing, well, the people are always adventurers. You know, they don't really take time off from being the murder hobos. But
yeah,
in a game where you're playing musketeers, no, you do get time off from your job. And then you can go explore character stuff and highlight the differences between the characters by what they do when they're off duty. Kind of mixing that high nobility with, you know, maybe like a commoner or very low nobility who's still part of the musketeers, that fish out of water thing that you were saying before, Chris. And how fun would it be to, yeah, go throw them into a party situation or something where they're completely out of their element, where today we're following this guy on his day off for whatever reason. Of course, work it into the story, and they have to attend a big, you know, fancy soiree, and so the commoner is completely out of the fish out of water, where the next time, maybe we're going to go down to the docks and go to a seedy area, and the high nobility, they're out of their element. So, again, I think that could be really fun.
That is really cool. I hadn't thought about it until you just mentioned it now, but yeah, that's a really good point. In previous episodes where we've discussed soldiers, we've talked about how everyone is kind of, as a soldier in a regular regiment, everyone is kind of the same unit with the same training, same kind of weapons, so it's really good to kind of highlight the differences between them. And a good way to do that is to explore how they handle their off time. And with a regular soldier group, like, for example, a modern army guy, it might be difficult because their off time, you know, might be going to a bar or visiting their family or something extremely mundane. But with the musketeers, that's not the case. They might be going off to these grand noble parties and things, or who knows, you know, seedy security work down at the dock, as you mentioned. It could be a really great way to go with the campaign.
If it didn't pay very well, well, hey, I'll accompany you on your job this time.
Could be a really fun break from the actual campaign itself, you know, just kind of take a little side tour. Only one character is actually playing as PC. Everybody else can pick up NPCs for that one session. It could be a good, fun kind of side adventure.
I hadn't thought of doing it like that, but you could do that. Or
it's a possibility.
Coming from different social standings, they probably have friends that aren't in the Musketeers, and then I think it would be pretty cool to detail not all those friends, but enough friends so that when you do focus on that one guy or girl, the other players can play that PC's acquaintances. So not that they're playing NPCs, but they're playing their own PCs who just aren't musketeers. And maybe get kind of tedious to do it all the time. But
yeah, but kind of just a little side break from a primary campaign thing.
All right, well, that ends our episode on the Musketeers. So we looked at rivalry, esprit de corps, or...
Entente! Sorry. Something about speaking French that makes me really excited.
Being noticed, being flashy.
Yeah, which Chris likes doing with his French.
Oui.
Colors.
All right.
And colors.
Colors and moonlighting would wrap up the four. Yep. That's okay. That was it. Okay. Those are the four.
All
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idlerehands.com. idlerhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can post comments on the episode, you can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, send us an email, mail@idlerhands.com, or you can join our forums hosted by Happy Jacks, thank you very much guys, at idlerhands.com/forums. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Merci beaucoup!
Bye.
Bye. All right, for tonight's episode, today's episode, this episode.
That is so staying in.
How is that staying in?
Wait, sorry. The Timberlands, were they the Grey Musketeers or the Black Musketeers?
Sorry,
no,
what?
No, that joke didn't... Okay, sorry. Never
mind. It did not at all. Sorry.
Well, I was just kind of thinking as... Yeah, like maybe people know about the Grey Musketeers and the Black Musketeers, but we haven't mentioned them yet.
Okay, sorry.
Which we're going to have to right now.
No, I'm pretty sure that joke's going to be cut.
Oh, okay.
not to worry, my friend.
But... I thought Wayne, you were doing it.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Wayne should do it. He knows more than I do.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, you were introducing all the themes.
All right. Colors. And no, I'm not doing the bad French accent.
Because it would be so hard, because in French, color is color.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, see,
You're not even doing a sentence. You're just like, colors.
Well, I was going to splice it into where you had said the next theme.
Yeah, and it's going to sound like this. And it's like, it's colorful personalities, and you're going to come in going, colors.
All right, you're right.
Colors.
Oh, come on. I did not sound like that guy.
Colors. Colors. That's very, very good.
Now I'm trying to think of a second.
Take your time because I'm still giggling. I'm good.
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.